This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
College holds a mythic place in American culture. On the new Campus Files podcast, we uncover the scandals you won't hear on the campus tours. Find Campus Files on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Thank you for texting in your thoughts on the Chaunce news. Chauncey Billups, the Blazers head coach for the foreseeable future with a multi-year contract extension. The news broke about 8:30, I'd say, this morning, something like that. As I was driving in, I was coming into the station. I was like, oh, buddy, I am fully torqued for this final Masters round today. And I am still torqued. I went from 6 to noon, and it's yesterday after the end of round 3, and it hasn't moved. I'm still up, still fully torqued for this final round because, Rashawn, I'd say since probably 2019 Masters, I don't know if I've been more excited for a final round of major golf since then. It cannot be set up more perfectly. Rory McIlroy, who is trying to complete the career Grand Slam. He's won the U.S. Open. He's won the Open, the British Open, whatever you want to call it. The PGA Championship. He's won all three. And he won all three a long-ass time ago. He has not won a major in over a decade. It's been 10 years since Rory has won a major. And this is the only one that he has not won. He is came very close and then absolutely collapsed on the final day of the Masters. I believe that was, God, I'm forgetting the year. I don't know if that was 2011 or 13. It's escaping me. But he has had his chances here, and he has not been able to capitalize. And basically ever since Saturday, halfway through Friday's round, he turned around his play immensely and has been playing fantastic since basically started the back nine on Friday. And he has now catapulted himself into the lead. He shot 6 under yesterday. He got 2 eagles yesterday on his round and now finds himself at 12 under par at the top of the leadership. But who is right behind him on the leaderboard? It is Bryson DeChambeau, the guy who was right behind him on the leaderboard for essentially the entire final round of the U.S. Open last year out at Pinehurst. And slowly but surely, one stroke at a time, Rory missed putts. Bryson made putts. Bryson made an excellent save out of the sand on hole 18 to set him up for the U.S. Open victory. And for Rory to have one of his most deflating major losses that he's ever had. I remember the British Open from a few years back. That one was brutal for him as well. But what happened last year at the U.S. Open, that haunted him. And we are now setting it up for a Rory McIlroy, Bryson DeChambeau final pairing for the final round of the Masters. Rory just 2 strokes above Bryson, 18 holes. I just, 18 holes, anything can happen. We could see Rory either totally collapse again, go in and shoot a high 70s and just completely fall apart, and Bryson or somebody else in the field takes the victory. We maybe see a Bryson and Rory just back and forth. That's what I hope for. It's just a back and forth between two of the best golfers in the game right now. But you got the PGA Tour face versus the Live YouTube personality. I mean, it is two worlds colliding, clashing. This is exactly what the golf world wants, and I'm sure that the CBS, PGA Tour, everybody who's involved with this is just licking their chops in excitement and just couldn't be happier.
Look at those blue eyes of yours light up when you talk about golf and you talk about Rory.
Jim Nance must just have a boner right
now. Seriously. Oh, I mean, I think your golf pants are super tight right now.
Oh, dude, you don't want to see what's going on under this table.
Oh, I definitely don't. You're 100% right. But I'm obviously nowhere near the golf fan that you are. But outside of, like, intense playoff basketball, like, is there a cooler – or a football game, obviously. Is there a cooler way to spend Sunday afternoon when you have two guys, and some cases three. Corey Connors is not super, super far behind. He's not going to catch either one of those guys.
But he would be the second Canadian to win the Masters. They've been commenting all week about how Mike Weir is lonely at the Masters dinner year after year.
So, I mean, a couple of mistakes by, you know, either Rory or Bryson.
And, I mean, the douche Patrick Reed is a few strokes behind on the leaderboard as well.
I mean, now, as much as we're looking for, like, this amazing kind of showdown between Rory and Bryson, like, how cool would it be if both of those guys kind of started to slip up and then, you know, Patrick Reed and Corey Connors all of a sudden picked up some steam through the first nine, or, you know,
or Scottie Scheffler or Jason Day, Ludwig Oberg, who I think finished second at the Masters last year. I mean, these guys are all – anywhere between 6 to 7 strokes off. But, yeah, I would love that, too, is if Rory and Bryson and Corey, all these guys kind of fell apart to start, and it's like, okay, we now have 8 golfers within 4 strokes of the lead. Like, I want pure chaos. Yeah, that's I'm always rooting for.
Some good breakfast. This is like a, for me, this is a mimosa day, or potentially a Bloody Mary day, and some nice breakfast and stuff like that, or a nice lunch, and just watch the last round of the Masters. Like, this is one of those days. Like, I almost kind of prefer this over, and mind you, I love football, absolutely love football, but not every football game is created equally. Some of them are trash, right, to watch a whole game. And most of us really watch Red Zone now, so we don't even watch, like, a full game. I have to get the full game experience, but I almost kind of enjoy this more than football on some days, especially when you have a really competitive final round of U.S. Open or Masters or whatever the case is. Like, that's awesome.
Well, that's the thing, is getting a Sunday that is competitive and there are guys that are within striking distance of each other in a major tournament. Whenever you got a guy going into the final round and he's up 5, 6, 7 strokes, listen, that's why golf is crazy, though, is that you got 18 holes for some. I mean, someone drops 3 strokes and they're at the top of the leaderboard, and someone is behind them and they're 3 over on the day, they're 300. It's like, that's a 6 stroke difference right there, just basically made up right there, and they are right back in it. That's the crazy part about golf, is that the way that this leaderboard looks today could look completely different by the end of it.
And somebody can have, you know, can be really good off the tee and then just can't finish putting and just can't knock it in. Like, the little things like that is like, oh, that little 5-foot, you know, chip shot that should normally go in for somebody just off to the left or just off to the right. Like, those are little moments like, ooh, everything changes that fast.
I feel like there's been a lot of missed putts in this Masters tournament. Like very close putts, just off the edge of the cup. It's been a lot of torture, and I feel like it's just a lot more closer shots, you know, at this. I don't think the weather was as good at last year's Masters, if I'm mistaken.
I think there was a little bit of rain.
There was like one day that kind of messed it up, but
it made it. I think there was some rain on one of the days that, you know, changed the conditions a bit. But, you know, throws guys off.
Yeah, but like this year, it's basically been, you know, maybe guys in the morning have had a little bit better of a course.
There was a little bit of wind on Friday for the later rounds that were throwing some of the golfers off as well.
I'm going to ask you both this. What's your most memorable Masters moment?
Memorable Masters moment?
I'm not going to say the best, you know, because I think the best and most memorable could be two different things for you.
I mean, it has to be Tiger
2019. Yeah, like, that's kind of what got me into golf. Yeah.
I mean, him winning that was...
Talking about the comeback, or not the comeback, but with the hurt.
Well, this was,
after the knee, right?
This was after the knee, before he got in the car accident. I mean,
Oh, you're talking 2019.
2019, okay. Yeah. I mean, this was one of the, it was one of those where people, they just kept asking forever and ever, can he win another? Can he win another? And from the previous results, you weren't sure if it was ever going to happen. And then slowly but surely over the weekend, and then Sunday comes around and he climbs up the leaderboard. I forget, he was not the leader going into that day. And then going into, like, the back nine, there was, like, 8 dudes that could have won it. Like, the leaderboard, on that 2019 Masters was absolutely insane. And the guy who ended up pulling it out at the end was Tiger freaking Woods, dude. Yeah. I think that will be his last major. I mean,
yeah, for sure.
I mean, there's no way he's winning another.
From his last one to his first one, I remember being in eighth grade and watching him, because I remember it rained on Sunday, and this is 97. So it rained on Sunday, so they canceled it for the day, and then they came back and played on Monday, and a 20-year-old Tiger won the Masters. And I remember that moment.
Is that the one he won by, like, 12 strokes?
Red shirt Tiger. First time we had ever seen the red shirt. And then I remember being downtown. There was a big kind of advertisement for Tiger, and it was like, when's his first Masters? Does this, turns 21, you know, later this year or something like that. I remember that, and always stuck with me for him crying, hugging his parents after he won, stuff like that, like young, the start of what we would know as the arguably the greatest golfer.
Yeah, it was the 1997 Masters. Yeah. He won by 12 strokes.
Yeah, so like that would be the start of arguably the greatest run for a golfer in history. There's only maybe one other person that could lay claim to that. And that's Jack Nicklaus. Outside of that, Tiger is the guy. So that was it for me. I don't know about you, Jordan.
No, I pretty much cite the same memory. I don't really, like, when I think of, like, golf and when I started watching it, I mean, yeah, that was that weekend in 97 with Tiger Woods. I just didn't really care unless it was, like, a big sport going on, you know, outside of, like, the Blazers and the Mariners.
I watched because he was black. Cool. I'll be honest.
For sure.
There was a black kid that was, you know, out there and... Yeah, that's the reason I watched it. So that was tight.
I remember the 2008 U.S. Open was a really good one. I just remember that one fondly because I was at Linfield football camp, and in between practices that weekend and, you know, scrimmages and stuff like that.
In between getting burnt out there?
No, I was doing the burning, Rashad, okay? No. My route running was crisp. I took pride in my route running because if you're not the fastest or the strongest receiver,
you better learn how to run a route.
You better be a good route runner. Okay, that is the wide receiver's key to success. Okay, route running. But that U.S. Open was awesome as well, where it came down to Tiger and Rocco Mediate. But again, man, this one's gonna be wild. It literally has me considering not spending this beautiful day outside and actually golfing. And just sitting on my couch, probably taking a nap in between holes 6, 7, 8, 9, and then waking up for that back 9. That's probably how it's looking. But I can't wait.
That's what's up. I'm excited for you.
You should be excited for yourself because you're going to be watching, damn
it. Yeah, I'm going to get my little workout in and watch the at least the first 9. So well, I don't know if I'll watch the back
or 9. You're going to watch the final day of the NBA.
I'm definitely not doing that. Like, if I happen to get like somebody gives me a cool ticket to the Blazer game, potentially, but no.
Well, let's take a look at the last day of the NBA because there's still a few things to be sorted out in the standings, especially in the Western Conference. A lot of things to get figured out there. So we do that next year, Sports Sunday, 1080 The Fan. The Lakers?
Yes.
Yes, Lakers.
But the Lakerless Lakers, I don't think any of the actual Lakers.
Yeah, Portland's a 6.5-point favorite.
Yeah. So, yeah, I guess this is...
Bronny, let's go, Bronny.
This is my question, is that, I mean, do the Lakers have their 3 seed locked up, like, via tiebreakers as well? There's only two other teams that could finish with the same record as the Lakers after today. That is the Nuggets. That is the Clippers. The Lakers have the 3 seed at 50-31. The Denver Nuggets and LA Clippers are right behind them at 49-32. So I'm guessing if the Lakers were sitting all their stars, that means that they're locked into the 3 seed and they don't have to play for anything, or they just don't care who they're going to play in the first round. I mean, that would be my assumption, right? Is that if, you know. Bueller, anybody?
I mean, I'm trying to look right now and see what the scenarios look like for today's games.
Like I said, I would think that if they have the 3 seed locked up and there is no point in playing this game today, then they would be playing their guys. They would have everybody else be playing so that way they could lock up the 3 seed. But the seeds 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, they are still up for grabs. As I mentioned, Denver Nuggets and LA Clippers, they are tied for the 4th and 5th seed. at 49-32. The Golden State Warriors right now have the 6-seed tiebreaker over the Timberwolves. They are both 48-33. The Grizzlies are locked into at least the 8-seed, possibly the 7-seed. They are at 47-34. So really what still needs to be decided is just the shuffling of, are the Grizzlies going to be the 8-seed or the 7-seed? Who is going to be that final play-in team? Is it going to be the Timberwolves, the Warriors, the Clippers, the Nuggets? Again, I know that all these teams have similar records and they might all end up tied. I mean, you could literally finish with the Nuggets, Clippers, Warriors, Timberwolves, Grizzlies, all with the same record by the end of the day. Mm-hmm. And at that case, if that's the case, if they all have the same record, who the hell is getting into the playoffs as a one, as a 6-seed, a 5-seed? Who's playing in the play-in game? Looks like the Grizzlies, regardless, are locked in to the play-in.
Yes.
The play-in tournament.
The Grizzlies
regardless.
Will absolutely be either the 7th seed or
at best,
the 8th seed.
Best 7th seed or at least the 8th.
Yes, so that's where Memphis is. Yeah, like it's always, man, so Memphis can finish
7th. It's a jumbled mess.
A Memphis win and with the Memphis or with the Minnesota loss, or they can get the 8th seed with a Memphis loss or with a Memphis win and a Minnesota loss.
Yeah, the top three seeds are the Thunder, Rockets, and the Lakers are locked. The Lakers are locked into the 3-seed. They cannot move. It is a fish.
But Denver, Clippers, and Golden State could see some movement in between there.
Western Conference playoff chances right now. The team that has the odds for the 4-seed are damn near dead even between three teams. Nuggets have a 36% chance. The Timberwolves have a 35% chance. And then the Clippers have a 29% chance at it. So it's going to be between those three teams. For the number 5-seed, the teams that really have the best odds at that are either the Clippers or Timberwolves, 51%, 44% respectively. The Warriors' best chances and I think the best that they can finish because of tie breaks and everything is the 6-seed, it looks like. Like, looking at the Western Conference playoff probabilities, they don't even have any percentages for 4th or 5th seed. So I don't think they can – I think the 6-seed is the best that the Warriors can finish today. And yeah. Then that would set up a LeBron, Steph Curry –
First round,
and Adam Silver somewhere is. You want to talk about being fully torqued going from 6 to noon? I mean, my God, that is Adam Silver right now. And then the Timberwolves, they're going to be probably somewhere in that 4, 5, 6 range, but possibly fall into 7. Right now, the Warriors have the highest percentage to be the 7th seed, so they would then have to play the play-in. God only knows what's going to happen.
Minnesota can finish anywhere between 4th and 8th. Which is crazy. Like, they can go from 4th seed and home court advantage to 8th seed and play in. Like, that can all happen today. So they can be the 8th seed if they lose and Memphis wins. 7th seed if Minnesota loses and Memphis loses. 6th seed if Minnesota wins and then Denver and the Clippers win. And then
this reminds me of basketball. When they are in the playoffs and they're like, yes, but if Dallas wins the Southern West Upper Mid East region, then they would then have to go into a tiebreak round with the winner of the Central Eastern Midwest Flyover State Division.
Yeah, the season that never ends pretty much is what they have, but that's what we're going through now.
We're in week 32 of basketball playoffs.
Man,
dear God,
so
someone end it.
There's a lot that can happen for Minnesota today. So if you're Minnesota, you pray to God that the Clippers and the Denver lose today and you get that dub. So that way you'll be that 4th seed because that's best case scenario for you.
And then in the East, no one really cares. I don't know if anything can happen in the East. I don't think the Pacers can get the 3-seed. Or if the Knicks are locked into this 3-seed. I do find it hilarious that the Orlando Magic, they are the 7-seed in the playoffs. They are also the division winner. Remember years ago when the division winners would get
the top three seeds.
Yeah.
That's right.
Or they would always get a top 4-seed.
You could be the 3-seed, but you'd be the 5 because somebody else had a better record. It was weird. Yeah.
So the Magic have the 7th overall seed in this year's playoff as the division winner. Can you imagine if they just, like, like, oh no, you get the fourth seed now.
Hey man, it sounds
that is
weird.
That is one area where we made an improvement in the NBA, where we no longer cared about division winners.
No, not at all. I think it sounds weird, but Orlando's one of those teams that like sneakily, like, I don't think a lot of people want to play them. Like Orlando's like sneaky good for no reason. I just think the Blazers matched up well with them for whatever reason. But outside of that, like Paolo Banchero is as good as any other superstar in this league. For sure. And then you throw in Franz Wagner and those other guys. Like, I think that Orlando team is better than people give them credit for.
I would like to see him get a little bit better. I mean, they regress from
last
year.
You mean like an Anthony Simons? Like, that's the big word is that, you know, that's where he wants to be.
Yeah. Send him back to Florida. He's an IMG guy, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Go ahead. That's fine. That's cool.
Until they win, and then we're like, oh, well, that's another one of our players. They went
free up some
else.
Minutes. I don't care. We don't need Anthony out there anymore. Right. But, yeah, still a lot to get figured out as far as the standings go in the NBA. A lot of the Eastern Conference games are underway. I mean, just about every single team in the Eastern Conference is playing right now, and it's in the first quarter. The NBA action starts at 12:30, where you literally have every team playing at the same time. I mean, Nuggets versus Houston, Dallas versus Memphis, Utah, Minnesota, Clippers, Golden State, Blazers, Lakers. It's all starting at 12:30. To get the final playoff matchups and then the play-in games, I believe they start on Tuesday. Yep, Tuesday, which you already have the 7th versus 8th seed matchup locked in for the East. That is the Hawks versus the Magic. And then the 9-10 game will be on Wednesday between the Heat and Bulls, which I'm sure one of those teams will win and then get the 8th seed and make a magical playoff run to win the NBA championship, right?
One, a boy can dream.
That's what the play-in's about, right? Giving those 9-10 seeds a chance to make the run. That is totally going to happen, right?
Bingo. It will one day.
The Heat just going off, the Bulls just going off and winning the NBA championship.
It will one day. It won't happen this year.
After being terrible the entire season?
Yeah, it won't happen this year, but it will happen.
Can I just quickly throw in that 20 of 30 teams having a shot at getting into the playoffs at the end of the season is one of the worst forms of sport I've ever seen. It's just that the play-in has ruined the NBA playoffs.
Well, again, if you look at this year's standings on both East and West, like, we should probably do a year-by-year. Do we need the play-in tournament this year? Because in the
Based
West,
on records,
yeah, it's
gotta
like
have at least 45 wins to be in the play-in. 40.
Or there has to be, like, between the 8 and 9 seed, like, maybe, like, a 2 to 3 game gap difference between records.
Yeah, if you're 5 games behind the 8 seed, you're out.
Yeah,
no need for play-in.
Between the Grizzlies and the Kings, the 8 seed and the 9 seed, there's 8 games separating them. It's like, okay, I don't think we need to do a play-in tournament this year, guys, in the West. I think we know who the 8 best teams are, for God's sakes.
Yeah.
All right.
Money, money, money.
Let's take a break, get more into some NBA stuff, and the Chauncey Billups news. From this morning, the Blazers extending their head coach. But first, Jordan Schultz. Schultzy with a SportsCenter update.
It's good to see you, though, man. Came back from Hawaii all tanned and feeling good. And then I think this ruined all of our day, if I'm being real.
If this isn't a back-to-reality moment, I don't know what it
Seriously.
Is.
Seriously.
Can I just say, yeah, a beautiful week in Hawaii. What
island again?
Our honeymoon. We did Maui for 4 days.
That's
and
right.
then we went to Oahu, Waikiki for 2 days.
We're at Wailea, correct?
Yes, Wailea, at the Grand Wailea, where they shot Just Go With It, that Adam Sandler, mm-hmm. Jennifer Aniston
Great
movie.
Great movie. Love
like
that
2011.
Movie.
Yeah, and beautiful, beautiful property. Finished up our trip in Waikiki. It was amazing. I got back, went to a great dance last night here in Portland called Glow Job. Everybody was painted up in neon.
Oh,
and
yeah,
my girlfriend gets back into town. I'm open for one of those.
Yeah.
Hey. No, let's just say that I had some hums rubbed on me, like, repeatedly
yes.
throughout the evening.
No, get them away from me. Stop it.
Not just like, oh, excuse me, sorry, but like, it was one of those nights.
Hold on a second.
Yeah.
So at a dance club, it was like a rave party-esque kind of thing?
Yeah, half-naked people, sometimes fully naked.
Oh, and some
soul.
And some dudes? Or some...
No, ladies. I mean, everybody. It was dudes and ladies that were half naked and sometimes fully naked.
Got some grapes rubbed on you?
No, the ladies.
Excuse me, sailor. Sorry about that.
Nope, that's not what was happening.
That sounds awesome,
aren't
man.
You cute?
Oh,
I actually went skating this week, man.
Oh.
Roller skating at Oaks Park on Tuesdays. It's like 18 and overnight. They played all like R&B and hip-hop. And I haven't been on skates in a little... And it's been some years. Like, I want to say like... 5 or 6 years something like that.
You get your little bow wow on, some roll
bounce. I did. I'll be honest. I ate S real quick. One time. Like skating backwards and everything like that. And there was somebody behind me and I tried to move not fast enough and slipped trying to catch myself. Luckily, really agile, and my hands caught the floor before my face did. But other than that, like, it was a pretty good day.
Well, I really hope that people out there find something nice to do and take your attention off the Blazers news that the Chauncey Billups is returning as their head. What are the honest, realistic expectations of a Chauncey Billups head coaching regime that he has everything that he needs? Somehow, some way, they have a star player. Like, I think that the NBA, it is very star driven. I think that's obvious. So there are some coaches that you don't know if they really are a good coach or they're just propped up by having an excellent roster in front of them. Like, let's be real. Steve Kerr, good coach. He's also coach. Has had one of, if not the best point guards of all time and best shooters of all time.
Under
his regime, the
for three of them, actually.
As long as he's been a head coach.
He's had three of the best shooters of all time.
So, I mean, like, how good, like, you give Steve Kerr this roster, what is he doing?
I will say this about Steve Kerr. Coming off of Mark Jackson, right? And Mark Jackson was a great motivator, not great at X's and O's. And I think where Steve Kerr is great is the fact that he was a great shooter, right? But he was not athletic like Steph. He was not quick like Steph. He couldn't shoot like Steph. And he can look at this player that could do a bunch of things and said, man, you're doing this right, but instead of doing this, do this. Do this instead. And all of a sudden, I think he helped transform Steph into the shooter that we see now. Like Steph, before when Mark Jackson was there, he wasn't shooting the ball and then turning away from the shot before it dropped. He wasn't doing that. That's some confident stuff that he was able to kind of pick up from practicing with Steve Kerr and coming off the screens and all these little things. So I will give him credit there. We've seen him come out of second halves and come out of, timeouts and everything and absolutely come draw a great play. But you're right. It's hard to tell, like, who's great if you're Phil Jackson because you got Michael Jordan, Kobe, and Shaq. How great of a coach are you? You know, really, it's hard to tell. But
and I feel like those are probably not, like, the best examples.
If you're Phil Jackson, it's the only example. You literally got three of the top 10 greatest players of all time to kind of build your legacy.
But there is obviously something to be said about you took over players that were with a previous coach and you elevated and you them to a championship level, which both of those coaches did, right?
Yes,
like Steve Kerr, he got that from Mark Jackson, and look at the Warriors now. Phil Jackson got it from Doug Collins, and then six championships later, look at that.
Mm-hmm.
But I am just generally curious.
Who was the Lakers coach before it was Phil? Del Harris. That's who we took over for.
You know, it's funny. My young mind does not even remember that.
Yeah, Del Harris, white hair, silver fox.
And right now, Chauncey Billups is talking to press. They're having their last regular season press conference before their game at 12. Well, no, because they'll do those tomorrow.
Yeah, let's do that now. But it's not even played.
But the Joe Cronin and Chauncey Billups are meeting with some press right now. I'm sure our own Danny Meringue is there. But just seeing some of the tweets or quotes that are coming out of it so far, Chauncey and Cronin right now are lamenting a lot about their just improvement on the defensive end. Over the stretch of this season, towards the second half of the season, the improvement that they saw in defense as being one of the catalysts to being like, hey, let's see this through. Quoting something that Chauncey said, I think we're in an amazing place with the organization. Anytime you're building something, you want to see some semblance of where it's at and where it's going to go. I think we can see that now. Again, just like, it's a lot of like, yeah, I think we have a vision. I think we know the style.
We're looking at something.
I think we can kind of see what's going on here.
That 11 out of 12 stretch was literally the worst thing that could have happened to the organization.
Oh, yeah.
It emboldens Joe Cronin and Chauncey to think that their plan is actually working a little bit, or at least gives them this kind of quote to tell the public when we all know What it does is just continue to keep them in that envelope of mediocrity.
It really, Joe Cronin, he said, rebuilds are tough. Something I'm really proud of is how we stayed together. Nobody panicked. When we started winning ball games and being really competitive on a nightly basis, it changed everything.
Nightly? Yes. It was like 3 weeks.
And what about all those dudes that you said that you were going to trade? And now you're like, well, I'm happy that we stayed together. Like, dude, you promised that you were going to make moves to improve the roster.
I feel like...
Now you're happy with this gaggle of dudes? What the hell?
What's that gif when the kid is the black kid is standing there and like the lone tear is kind of rolling down his face? That's right. How I feel. Like, I mean, and I know there are a lot of people that, oh, you guys are clowns for this. It's like, man, a coach that is 191, whatever it is, like, that's not a great coach. That's not a great history of coaching. And considering what's available, I feel like you didn't try, and you just kind of went back to what you feel like you know and what you feel like works, and it doesn't work. You're the only person that believes that this experiment has worked.
Chauncey also saying, and then we'll go to break here, on not having a superstar, he says, I think we're raising that. Most people would say, go get that person. We may already have that guy.
God, I've heard that so many times on mediocre freaking rosters.
We might already have that star player.
Scoot Henderson.
Are you freaking serious? Yeah. I would trade them for LaMelo Ball and freaking Brent. Oh, my God.
I love LaMelo.
Tomorrow.
I love LaMelo.
Would you rather have the Hornets young stars or the Blazers young stars? Would you rather have the Raptors young stars and Scottie Barnes or the Blazers young stars? Well, I would rather have just about every other combination than we have in Portland. Come on.
Can you tell me what the Hornets record is?
I don't care what their record is. The talent they have at those positions is way too much.
And that is
way more than Portland.
And that has led to what exactly in Charlotte?
I'm not saying it leads to anything.
In a bad conference, they're the worst, and I think, or one of the worst. And so, I mean, I feel what you're saying, because LaMelo is.
And Brandon Miller? I mean, come on.
You got two super exciting players. However, in the East, they're not
talk
doing
about
nothing. In the West, they would be less than that.
Hey, as far as, you know, one thing that the LaMelo Ball and the Blazers do share in common is that they clearly don't care about winning. LaMelo Ball, he'll put up 35, 12, and 10, and the Hornets will lose by 15, and you wouldn't even know that.
I'm swerving in the corner. Whoa, as long as you play that.
I think LaMelo would be fine with that, honestly. Let's take a break. Let's wrap things up here on Sports Sunday on 1080 The Fan. He is the Blazers head coach for the foreseeable future. And Joe Cronin, he said this, and I quote, GM-coach relationships are complicated, especially when you're navigating tough times. I'm proud of how we've navigated this together. It's unique that two people in our jobs can work together so seamlessly. It's one of our strengths. With Chauncey following up saying, I now understand how long it takes to build a culture. I feel like we've done that. The telltale of that for any coach is at some point when your team takes on your personality and how you believe the game should be played, you've gotten there. Listen, I'm just saying that with Joe and Chauncey all saying this, okay, like, if you guys believe in yourselves so much and the relationship that you have and the culture that you have instilled and that, okay, we're here, now we take the next step, okay, like, we better effing see it, because also the fans that you have that are just diehard Rip City Blazer fans that will believe and hope no matter what, you have a good chance of losing some of those over the next couple of years if nothing comes out of this. And I feel that if you do not have results over the next couple of years, tangible results, I mean, the next step, I would say, is a fair bare minimum, is making the playoffs next year. And I don't think it should be a making the playoffs as a 9 or 10 seed and you made the play-in so you can technically claim it, or even just eking out a set. Like, you need to be comfortably in a playoff position, even if you are a 7 or 8 seed next year and win your play-in game, and so that way you are playing a first round series. I will take that as a sign of improvement. You always want to improve, right? But you need to be competing at the top of this conference within the next 3 years if you really want to be taken seriously. But what's going to happen is they're going to do what I just said, probably make the play-in next year, 7, 8, 9 seed, whatever. Call it a great year that we improved. They'll do a little bit better the year after, and then probably max out around the 6 seed, 5 seed every year, And that's going to be, again, their good enough standard that they have set for Chauncey Billups and this team. And quite frankly, I don't think that's good enough. It's just, to me, as a fan of this franchise and this team, the purgatory mediocrity of six seed and below, but not as bad as the third, fourth worst record in the wet. That is the place that they're always going to live in.
Well,
I'll
say this, and I know we have to wrap. I'll say this. If we were in the Eastern Conference, I would totally agree with the seventh, eighth, ninth seed is not good enough. In this Western Conference, considering the way it's set up, I think that sixth seed is incredibly – I think that would be important. I think that would be a huge leap forward for this Blazers team, just considering the five or six teams that are going to be ahead of them. And I think, if there is going to be regression in the West, it's going to be because guys decide to sign somewhere else or they're traded somewhere else or whatever the case is, because the way it's set up, like, the West is super stacked.